Welcome to the Live Retail Online Integration Webinar, Google Shopping, 7 Tips for Relevancy and Revenue. I'm Melissa Campanelli, Editor-in-Chief of ROI and the host of today's event. Ever since Google Shopping, the Google service that allows consumers to search for products online and compare prices between different vendors, transitioned into a monetized service last year built on product listing ads, retailers have been looking for ways to get the most out of it. In today's interactive webinar, our speakers, John Lawson, the CEO of Third Power Outlet, founder of the e-commerce group and president of Colder Ice Media, and Ronnie McNeil, manager of comparison shopping services at Channel Advisor, will discuss best practices and tips around using Google Shopping to grow relevancy and sales. Today, you'll learn the following: what the upcoming changes to the Google Shopping feed mean and how retailers should react, 7 deep dive tips to optimize your Google Shopping strategy, including product target strategies, differentiation techniques, and more, and the most common Google Shopping missteps to avoid. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips to make the most out of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console, marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Also, please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. I just want to give you a quick overview of the agenda for today's webinar. First, we're going to go over a brief history of Google Shopping. Then we're going to offer 7 tips to relevancy and revenue, and then we'd be happy to take your questions. So to start out today's webinar, I'm going to pass it on to John Lawson of Colder Ice. Take it away, John.
Thanks very much, Melissa. And I want to say what's up to everybody that's listening. You got your boy here, John, from Colder Ice. And I'm going to go over, basically what this thing is, because it's been a huge conversation in the e-commerce group on Facebook about what product listing ads are and why are they important. So I was at Channel Advisor's event in Las Vegas, and the CEO of Channel Advisor, Scott Wingo, was speaking. And one thing he said that really made an impact on me was that in the last 18 months, Google has made more changes to its e-commerce offerings than it has in the past 3 to 4 years. So we're in today looking at the evolution of Google's PLAs, or product listing ads. What they do is that product listing ads are search ads that include richer product information, stuff like the product image is there, the product pricing is there, and you and I as merchants, our name is there without us requiring additional keywords or cool, funny ad text to make people click on these ads. So whenever a user enters a search query relevant to an item in your Google Merchant Center account, Google will automatically show that most relevant product along with the associated image, price, and product name. But how do we really get to this phase of shopping on Google? So I want to just go over a little bit of the history of where we are today and how we got here. So basically, a long time ago, there was this stupid name that came out. It was Google. That was a stupid name. And then it came up with another stupid name. It was Frugal. I was like, wow, what are these two things? But basically, Frugal was launched in December 2002, and it used the web crawler from Google to index product data from websites. They used AdWords to kind of monetize this thing called Frugal, and it was ultimately renamed to Google Product Search in 2007. But when it was Frugal, it was very, very raw. It stayed in beta forever and finally kind of came out of beta very recently. Then at the same time, because that one was a feed that came from the crawler, they also created something called Google Base. And Google Base was a database where us as users could add almost any kind of structured content, structured data. And inside of Base, you had the ability to have supported text, images, XML files, PDFs, XLS files, and all kind of other structured data. This Google Base was actually replaced with the Google Shopping API in 2009. So even though Base had products in it, it also had things like recipes and, you know, here's a book. It had all kind of different things in there that was not totally related to shopping, but it became one of the major core components of Google Shopping. So that's when they kind of removed a lot of the other content and then folded this in to what was kind of Frugal, and then we got the product search from Google. And that's been, you know, kind of what we know today. But when it was first kind of launched, Google, it made this product search, and it was really very un-Googly. It looked like a, you know, an advertising site. It looked like an e-commerce site. And Google actually made an attempt to get a retail look and feel, and that was a little different for Google. So Google kind of dabbled in this thing called boutiques, and they had bought this smaller company, boutiques.com, and they opened that boutique on Google for the Google Shopping or the Google product search. And it kind of came online, and we almost, if you blinked too fast, you might have missed it, but it really was a possible precursor for Pinterest, because if you remember how Google's product search worked, you could actually, as a store owner, create your own boutique, and it would actually, you know, have your product listed in that boutique, but also other people, bloggers and trendsetters, style people, could actually create their own boutique, and then other people would follow their boutiques, and it would show how many people were following or how many people you were following and in their boutique. It was very, very Pinteresty. But like I said, if you blinked, you probably totally missed it. I don't think the people at Pinterest missed that. And that didn't really float very well in the Google environment, but it really did change the image of what I thought personally about what shopping was, where it was going, and possibly where we are today. Okay, so then we move up, and now we have Google Shopping. Now, Google Shopping is what you and I probably are most familiar with. It was a free service. It was populated by us, the vendors. You know, we used our Google Merchant Feed accounts, and we got our products listed in there. It was free, free to list all of your products, but it was also very competitive. And another thing was that it was constantly changing. It was somewhat annoying sometimes because one day all your products would work in the feed. The next day you'd get an error and all of a sudden all your products didn't work because they added some new functionality. So it was a little bit still not completely stable in the way I would like it to be stable, but it was free. So there you go. But now here we are today with product listing ads. And PLAs have been a very big change. It is totally a paid environment. It has sorted listings that go right on the search engine results page. So, I mean, if you just look at this slide, all of those pictures at the top, they say sponsored, they're sponsored ads, but they're sponsored from product listing ads. So it really affords us the opportunity to be very high on the search result page simply by participating in product listing ads. It's 100% pay to play, so the free listings have been removed. Some say that's good, some say that's bad, but one thing that it has done is given a richer and more engaging experience for the shopper. And then if you kind of look into the shopping page and how they have made changes in the shopping page, you can see how your products would be listed in Google PLAs. And, of course, we're going to hear some more great things about how to really optimize your ads and how to get started with these ads. But if you just look at Q4 2012, the impressions or shares of paid listing ads have jumped more than 60% from when they started, and it's been very, very positive for Google and for those of us that have been testing and playing around and now really getting serious about how to funnel our money and use these PLAs. Another cool thing that I grabbed this chart with RKG's marketing report, and they're seeing 22% higher return of investments from people that are actually using PLAs. So what a lot of retailers are doing is taking a portion of their paid advertisement budget and putting that portion into PLA, and they're really starting to see higher ROI, and 33% of their e-commerce clients that are using ROI are seeing search coming in or search traffic coming in from these paid listing ads. So it is definitely now been tried. It's been tested by many retailers. And I think overall the product would get a serious thumbs up. So here's what I want to do with you guys, just from a retailer perspective, because I'm a retailer like you guys. You know, I'm interested in hearing what Channel Advisor has to say, hearing best practices, and learning more and more about this, quote, new thing, because it's a paid advertising platform. But I have been using it, and I can give you some of the basic pitfalls and things you might just want to look at and avoid as an online retailer. And this is one of the things that I've gleaned from talking to a lot of people in the e-commerce group and just things that we've been pushing back and forth to learn more from each other and from our own experiences to really make sure that we don't, you know, fall into some of the areas where it becomes extremely costly and it does not convert well. So one of the things I'm talking about right now is how costly it can be if it's not maintained early on, because we came from an environment where it was free to list and we would push all of our SKUs into, you know, PLA. So when it first switched over, I was like, okay, I'm switching too. Go ahead and start bidding, you know, very small, but on everything in our inventory. The one thing you do want to make sure is that after you start pushing things out, you want to take a step back, start analyzing and determining which search queries are getting you the highest quality matches. That's one of the things you want to be aware of, and then you can start pushing more and more and getting higher in the ones that are actually quality matches and then bringing down the ones that maybe are not. But also at the same time, what we found or what we consider to be some very dead stock items all of a sudden started taking off simply because of being listed in PLAs on Google. So number two, you must keep your feed updated, okay? When you change the price, or when you change the description, or if you change any of the most important parts of the details of your product, you want to make sure that your feed goes back out and updates again. If you put products on sale, you have to make sure that you refeed that through your product listing ad so it actually gets shown with its new pricing. So definitely keep up with the feed. All right, and number three, don't think that this is the same thing as AdWords. It's really not. AdWords is just what it is. It's a word with ads. This is way more than that. It's got pictures. Yay! You know, but also it makes it very relevant because people are actually seeing the product before they click on the ad. And I think that's one of the real reasons why we're seeing better click-through rates and more return on our investment is because these customers are actually seeing that product before they actually have to click, and, of course, we don't pay until they click. So that has been a good thing, but don't think about it just like AdWords because they are not the same. It's way different, and these people are actually looking for that product and normally are ready to shop for that product by the time they click on your ad. It's, you know, if you're not committed to the time and the money for the success, then this might not be the right venue or the right avenue for you. I mean, if you're, you know, I've got $3 to spend, let's try this out. I don't think that's going to necessarily make an impact on your bottom line where you're like, hey, this worked. So you really want to take the time and the money to be committed for your own success in this platform. Definitely set aside a portion of your annual budget, your quarterly budget that you're already spending on advertising online, and look at pushing some of that towards these PLAs, because that will give that regularity. It will give you the placement that you really are looking for. All right? And then the final thing I have to say, which is, you know, not regularly testing and optimizing, man. Keep looking at opportunity. Keep looking for the opportunity, and definitely watch and monitor your keywords, because you can use negative keyword matching to actually stop driving traffic on a keyword that is not relevant to your product, because you want to definitely continue to do that and analyze that inside of your reporting so that you're getting the best ROI. So that's pretty much the quick overview that I wanted to do with you guys, as I will stay on the call until the final, of course, and I'm going to pass this off now to our Quinn from Channel Advisor. Ronnie, you're on.
Thanks very much, John. I appreciate you walking through the history of Google Shopping, putting some perspective around that from the retailer side. So let's talk about how we can maximize relevancy and revenue in Google Shopping. I think first and foremost, people need to realize, as John was explaining, there's been an evolution here, and Google Shopping was really built on a foundation that started really with retailers providing a feed of data to get their products live. And about a year ago when Google decided to monetize this and bring this under the AdWords umbrella, I think a lot of people were taken aback by the glitz and glam of AdWords being involved, and probably have forgotten a little bit about the fundamental importance of the feed that's actually powering the content that's displayed at Google. So I want to start here with talking about feed quality, what needs to be done just to get live on Google and to give Google the data that they're looking for. If we can't do this, we're not going to be able to play here at all. So it all starts with a feed. Google has an extensive list of requirements. We could take several hours just to talk about those, but for those that are kind of new to the program, I would suggest maybe Googling, go to Google and search for Google Shopping feed specification, and you'll see all the rules and regulations. But one aspect of the requirements that tends to get a lot of merchants challenges and is really a deal breaker for those that can't meet these requirements is unique product identifiers. And so what are we talking about there? Well, Google defines unique product identifiers as brand of a product, as the manufacturer part number, and as the G10, which is Google's name for basically UPC or book number. And Google wants you, if you're selling non-apparel items, Google wants you to give them two of those three pieces of data, brand, MPN, and or UPC. If you're selling media and software, again, you've got to provide two of those three, but UPC has to be there. And then if you're selling apparel, really all that's required is brand, among these three identifiers, but then there are more specific requirements around apparel. So depending on what vertical you're in on the retail side, there are some different requirements that Google's looking for. So let's move into apparel specifically. We talked about brand as being a requirement, but in addition to brand, in the apparel categories, Google wants to know what is the gender that this item is intended for, what is the age group, youth or adult, what color is this item, and what size. If we're selling clothing and shoes, size is required. If we're selling accessories like handbags, jewelry, then size is optional. But you've got to tell Google this product is intended for male or female, this is a youth or an adult product, and you've got to tell Google what the color of that product is. So, again, not being able to provide any of this information means you're not going to be on Google at all. So this is the first step. Let's talk a little bit more about apparel because it gets even more complex. In the apparel space, Google really wants you to give them all of the variants of your product set. So in apparel, that means if I have a T-shirt, Google wants to know you have a green T-shirt, you have a blue T-shirt, and you have a blue T-shirt in size 16, and you have a blue T-shirt in size 14, and they're taking all that data to optimize the user experience and to allow shoppers to see what options are available for products. But supporting that is even more kind of apparel-specific data requirements, and we want to talk about those here. You've got to give Google the parent SKU. What SKU ties all of these different variations together? And then you also have to tell Google, define the variation for Google. Is the variation determined on the material of the T-shirt? Is it on the pattern? Is it on the color? Is it on the size? And you need to clearly define that and send the appropriate values. And then finally, whether you're in apparel or any other category, remember that you can go to Google Merchant Center and that you should be going to Google Merchant Center and go into the data quality section there and look at the error messages that Google is telling you. There will be critical errors, hopefully not too many of those. The critical errors are the ones you really need to pay attention to, and this is where Google is going to tell you, hey, we're asking you for brand, MPN, and or UPC, and you're only giving us one. This is where Google is telling you that information, and this is where you need to be keeping an eye on to make sure your Google Shopping campaign is healthy and not at jeopardy of being pulled down. Google is a stickler on requirements, and we have seen in many cases where Google has pulled a merchant's listings down entirely because they take issue with a few products that we're sending and we're not playing by the rules. So that's the basics from a feed requirement perspective. Now let's talk about content. Again, I think when the transition of Google Shopping moved from free to paid, people really started to think about the paid side of it, and they started to think about AdWords and bidding on specific keywords like we might do in a traditional paid search campaign. But here on Google Shopping, it's really the content that's in the feed that's driving relevance for Google. When we get into AdWords, we can't bid on specific keywords and tell Google we really want to be visible when a shopper searches for this keyword. What we have to do instead is give Google all of those keywords in the product data that we give to them. So an example here is if I have inventory and I have all of these attributes for an item, my title is T-shirt, my brand is Hanes, my material is cotton, color blue, size large, gender men's, what we really want to do is give Google all of that relevant information in the title so that when a shopper searches for Hanes T-shirt, we're there. If a shopper searches for cotton T-shirt, we're there. If we were to only send them the basic title of the product that we have in our inventory, we're only really standing a chance to get any traffic on the term T-shirt. So again, the content that's in the feed is really going to prove relevance for Google and surface your ads. Along the same lines in terms of, you know, optimizing content for relevance, we want to start with giving Google as much relevant data as we can, putting those keywords into titles and descriptions to give our products a chance of being surfaced when a shopper goes to Google and searches for a product. But we should also look at things like Google Trends to help us decide what are the best terms to include here. So taking my previous example, if I sell a T-shirt and in my inventory I spell T-shirt, I spell that out, T-E-E, I can go to Google Trends and look at how common is it that someone would search for T-E-E shirt and versus how common is it for someone to search for T hyphen shirt. Google Trends is a great tool for this, gives us a lot of insight into what's really driving search traffic. And then if I go into Trends and I see, hey, shoppers are much more likely to search for the hyphenated version of T-shirt and not for T-E-E shirt, then I want to act on that knowledge and put the T hyphenated shirt kind of term in my title. That's a better title. It's going to give me a better chance of surfacing in front of a shopper because they're more likely to be searching that way. Okay, so we've talked about feed content, feed quality, feed requirements. Now let's get into kind of the advertising side of it. AdWords offers us the ability to attach promotional text to our product listing ads. Right now that ability is free, that ad text is free. It gives us more real estate on the first SERP, and it can separate us from our competition. So here's a screenshot on the left, just a search for a blue T-shirt. the big guy Target is there, and people know who Target is, so maybe it's not as important that they be attaching promotional text to their ads, but I'm curious why they're not, because it is free. Whereas CheapsTees.com here, probably not too many people have heard of that merchant, but they're taking advantage of the free ad text that Google lets us use and offering to consumers that if you come to our site, you're going to get free shipping once you spend $69. That's a big value proposition that we can convey to the shopper for free and grab more attention. So this is, you know, particularly helpful for the smaller merchants who maybe have a unique value proposition that they're trying to convey to get shoppers to their site. Take advantage of this ad text. On the right, just a snippet of a screenshot here to show you where that ad text is powered from inside AdWords. If you go into your product listing campaigns and you go to the ads tab, you can define that promotional text right there at the ad group level. All right, so that's the advertising side. Now, how do we control efficiency and how do we bid? The big kind of question mark for people when Google moved Google Shopping over to a paid program is, well, where do I start from a bidding perspective? How do I do this? Again, if people were familiar with AdWords in the past, it was generally around paid search campaigns. So there may be some familiarity with some of the tools in AdWords, but as it applies to Google Shopping and product listing ads, there are some techniques that we would use here that may not be so familiar to someone who's only used it in the context of a traditional keyword paid search campaign. The beauty of Google Shopping and integrating Google Shopping into AdWords is that AdWords gives us extreme flexibility in how we organize our shopping campaigns. So the basic is that we set our bids with a product target. And that product target can be defined by using any combination of these criteria on this slide on the left. ID would be basically your SKU. Brand is obvious. Product type is the category that we send to Google. Condition, so for those of you that have refurbished products and new products, you might want to bid your refurbished products separately, and you can point to that condition field to kind of define that target. There's an all products option, which means every product in my feed is eligible for this bid. We want to use that, but we don't want to solely rely on that. And then the more advanced approaches are to use AdWords labels and AdWords grouping. Those two target criteria are defined in the data feed that we send to Google. And they're, again, kind of highlighting the importance of the feed itself. So not just from the content that we're providing to Google, but the feed is also very valuable in allowing us to set up some slick, customized ways of bidding and targeting our products differently. So let's talk about some of those techniques. What we really want to do when we set up bids and target those bids to your product set is to align our targets with the dynamics of your business. So if you sell multiple brands and you have different margins that are fairly consistent across those brands, maybe it makes sense to take the intermediate step here and define your targets at the brand level. If you want to get more advanced, then let's say you sell multiple brands and you sell Nike products, but you know that your golf clubs perform a little differently within the Nike brand, then you want to take the next step and define your product targets as a combination maybe of the brand and the product type. And then the really advanced method here is to do some very custom targeting, again, powered through the feed, and we can use AdWords labels for that. In this example, let's say you've got 10 SKUs that are your top sellers and you want to push those things as hard as you can. Well, within your feed, you can send this top SKUs AdWords label for those 10 products, and then when you go into AdWords, you can bid all of those 10 products very aggressively and bid those differently from other products in your feed. By a similar notion, let's say your business is really, it's all about margin, as it is for everybody, and you want to group all of the products that fall into certain margin buckets and bid those accordingly. So you can define AdWords labels in your feed based on the margin, the product level margin, and then bid all products that, let's say, have a 20 to 25% margin, we'll bid those accordingly. 30 to 35%, we'll bid those differently. That's the real advanced complexity that, Google gives us here when we use AdWords labels. So when Channel Advisor is managing product listing ads for our clients, we are heavily relying on the AdWords labels functionality and controlling those labels through the feed that we send to Google every day. The other advantage of using AdWords labels here is that it is very flexible and it is much more dynamic. We can change those AdWords labels in the feed as often as we like every day. And then on the AdWords side, once that label is defined and there's a bid there already, it's good to go. So I can move items in and out of my top SKUs target, for example, on a daily basis or even multiple times a day through the feed without having to make changes on the AdWords side once I have that all set up. Tip number five is negative keywords, and this is something that John alluded to. Negative keywords is something that people that have more of a paid search experience with Google are probably familiar with, but we can also use negative keywords on product listing ads and in Google Shopping. You can find performance and traffic by keyword if you go into the dimensions tab in AdWords and segment that out by search term. In this example, I've pulled out the $20 Chuck Taylors term. Let's say that there is no chance that I will ever sell a pair of Chuck Taylors at $20, and I don't think I'm going to get any good traffic from that. Well, I've looked in the dimensions tab here, and I've seen that I'm getting some traffic on that term, and I've decided I don't want it. If I had the AdWords pixel here, I might even see conversion rate and see that it's very poor. I can go into the keywords tab, go down to the bottom to negative keywords, and add a negative keyword for $20 Chuck Taylors. Another more generic example of this is, let's say I have a brick-and-mortar presence, and I go into AdWords, and I'm looking at my product listing campaigns, and I'm looking at my search terms, and for some reason, careers at Colder Ice is one of the search terms in there. Well, I don't really want people who are searching for career opportunities to have a chance to click on products that I'm selling, because chances are that those aren't going to convert very well. So that's more of a general example of the types of negative keywords we can look out for. Number six, budget management. As John mentioned, PLAs can get very expensive. Not everyone has unlimited budgets. In fact, most people don't. So the very basic way to control this is through setting an actual budget, a daily budget in AdWords. So that's a very simple option we have that Google gives us by default. We can set that budget per day, and we know that we're not going to spend more than that over the long term. So that lets us kind of control spend at a very high level. Google also offers a couple of different options in terms of how they serve your ads based on your budget, accelerated and standard. So in the accelerated mode, that means Google is going to show your ads constantly from midnight on until your budget is stretched out. The standard delivery method, it's probably more useful for those with very small budgets, is to kind of spread that traffic out. And Google is doing this automatically. So if I tell Google I've only got $500 to spend today and I set my delivery method to accelerated, I may spend that $500 before most people wake up. If I set it to standard delivery, that $500 will carry me throughout the whole day. Taking that a step further, AdWords gives us the ability to daypart, essentially, and to make adjustments and schedule bid adjustments by day and even by time of day. So this is something that really lets us dial in our spend, especially when we're in kind of a constrained budget scenario. If I don't have a lot of money to spread out throughout the day, let me focus that money on the middle part of the day if that's the best part of the day that works for me. And again, you can do this by day as well. So if I know that Tuesday sales are always very good for me and Thursday not so much, I can set bid adjustments by day of week to help me bid less on those days where I don't expect performance to be that good and to help me spend more on the days where I do expect performance to be good. And then finally, the latest change that Google has made to really the entire AdWords experience is this concept of enhanced campaigns. This has a much greater impact for paid search, traditional paid search keyword-based campaigns, not so much of an impact on the product listing ads in the Google Shopping experience. However, the one big impact that it has on Google Shopping is that it means right now that we will be targeting mobile and tablet devices by default. So before enhanced campaigns were introduced, when I set up a product listing ads campaign, I could tell Google, I want this campaign to be served to shoppers who come to me through desktops, to shoppers who come to me through mobile, and or tablets. And I could choose each of those device types, and I could even create different campaigns by device type so that I can control spend and bids very efficiently depending on the type of device that a shopper was coming to Google through. With the introduction of enhanced campaigns, that functionality is being somewhat taken away. So when I create a product listing ad campaign today, and when my existing campaigns are switched over to enhanced campaigns, everything is eligible now. Every device type is eligible for traffic by default. I can no longer tell Google with a click of a button that I'm not interested in advertising to people who come to me through tablets, and I'm not interested in advertising to people who come to me through mobile. What they are doing, though, with enhanced campaigns is giving us the ability to set a bid factor, a bid adjustment factor for the different device types, and that bid factor is indexed against our desktop bid levels. If we install the Google Conversion Pixel from the AdWords campaign on our site, we'll get detailed insight inside AdWords on how each of these device types are performing, what are my conversion rates, how much traffic is coming through these device types, what are my conversion rates, well, how much should I really be thinking about spending here, and then we can use that data to inform what those bid adjustments should be. In most cases, we find that tablet traffic does fairly well for merchants, maybe not quite on par with desktop traffic, but right now mobile devices are a bit of a challenge, generally speaking, from a return perspective. So the mobile piece is the one we want to take the closest look at. Fortunately, though we can't check a box and tell Google that we're not interested in advertising to people who come to us through mobile devices, we can't actually set our bid adjustment at negative 100%, which essentially tells Google I don't want to bid at all, and that eliminates the mobile device traffic. On the tablet side, we are not able to do that, so we're going to always advertise to people who come through tablets going forward under enhanced campaigns, but on the mobile side, we have the ability to eliminate that entirely by bidding it to negative 100%. So those are the seven tips that that we came up with. I think we could spend several hours talking about Google Shopping, but these are, I think, some very fundamental points that everyone should be aware of, whether you're new to Google Shopping or whether you're more of an advanced user. We tried to give some insight into different levels of expertise with Google Shopping, but at this point, I think we're open to questions.
Yes, definitely. Thanks so much, Ronnie, and I hope, John, I hope that you're still on. Oh, excellent. Because we have a few questions, but I'd like to encourage our listeners, because there's a lot of you guys out there, to please be sure to ask questions, because we're here to answer them. And I know this can be kind of a heady kind of a subject, but you know, we're here to answer them, and this is an important topic. So, the first question I'm going to ask that came through is sort of around Google catalogs. One of the attendees was questioning why Google catalogs was not brought up in the context of Google Shopping. And I don't know if John, do you want to take that, or Ronnie? I mean, how do they sort of connect, and how does that work out? If there's any feedback there.
I can take that one. I don't know if John has specific experience with the Google catalog side, but Google likes to tie a lot of things to the data feed, and one of those is Google catalog. And for those that aren't familiar with what Google catalogs is, it's basically it was designed primarily for tablet shoppers. It's an app that people can download and look at, really a digital representation of a very old-fashioned looking print catalog. And within that app, the catalog listings are clickable, so I can click in that app and go straight to a merchant's website. That program is tied to the data feed that we're dumping into Merchant Center. It is not right now monetized, so the bidding that we do on the AdWords side has no role in that. So content is the only piece of the feed and the Google shopping experience that's really related to the Google catalog piece, and that's why we didn't focus so much on that here today. It should also be noted that we can, inside Merchant Center, you do have the option to send multiple feeds to Google and designate that this feed is going to catalog and this feed is going to Google Shopping. So if we wanted, we could send separate feeds that were optimized differently for the different destinations there.
Yeah,
John, did you want to answer that?
Yeah, just two things that people might not know. Like catalog, like you said, is, you know, basically a representation of your current print catalog. I don't have one, so that's why I didn't mention it. But the other thing is that it's currently only available in the U.S., and it's really an iPad, functionality. It's being moved over into the Droid world and the Droid tablets, but it's still, you know, it's still kind of a small ecosystem of Google.
Okay, great. Let's see. I hope that answers the question. We have another listener who is interested, and I believe this can go to Ronnie. Do you recommend using SKU-level targets with Google Shopping? And if so, how do you use them in conjunction with the targeting strategy that you outlined?
Right. So SKU-level bidding is what the question is really around, and the question
right.
is, do we want to set up targets for specific SKUs in the feed? And I think we do want to do that in some cases, particularly when there are specific products that we are very keen on getting visibility for. So let's say I go out there and I sell yo-yos, and on Dunkin' Yo-Yo, I want the Dunkin' Butterfly Yo-Yo to sell, and I cannot get it to sell. I can bid if I had my target set up at the Dunkin' brand level, I could bid that Dunkin' brand as much as I want, but for some reason Google has latched on to some other Dunkin' Yo-Yo and they're not surfacing it. So in those cases, it makes sense to define a target for just the Dunkin' Butterfly and bid that very aggressively, even more so than all the other products that I'm bidding on. That's one example, so the visibility play. Another example is, you know, a margin play. If there's a product that we really know we've got a lot of, we've got a backlog of inventory and we've got a high margin on it, we really want to push it, then we would definitely consider setting up SKU targets as well.
Okay, that's great. I think that answers the question. Well, we have a lot of questions coming in, so bear with us, folks. Let's see, somebody was wondering if enhanced campaigns, if Google is combining desktop with tablets, if that's true, and if so, why? I guess I can go to either.
I think it's a great question.
I think it's a great question. So yes, the first part of the answer, is yes. Google is combining desktop with tablet and not giving us the ability to really segment those two device types out and treat them differently from a bidding perspective. Why they may be doing that? I think Google knows that, generally speaking, tablet traffic conversion rates aren't so far off from desktop traffic. The return on tablet traffic is not so far off from desktop traffic that it's close enough that by lumping tablets in with desktops and forcing everyone to advertise on tablets, merchants aren't going to be too upset because their returns are going down from that tablet traffic. But at the same time, Google's going to make a lot more money off of that traffic because now they're by default giving themselves a chance to take a CPC on tablet traffic. So I think that's why they're lumping those two together. It's more of a strategic probably play on Google's side to make money. They're in the business of making money here. I think mobile is still kind of separated out probably because of the performance issue. We have not seen mobile traffic do nearly as well. So if Google were to start selling merchants, you have to be on mobile now and you have no choice. I think merchants would balk at that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you want to add anything to that, John? Or
no, that's a good guess.
Yeah. Okay. let's see. Ronnie, you had talked a little bit about bidding and I guess 100% will eliminate mobile device traffic, I think.
Right.
I think the listener just wants you to go over that a little bit or just explain what you mean.
Sure. Let me go back and see if we can get to that slide. It was here, wasn't it? So just to touch on that point one more time. Right now, we can set our bids inside AdWords for all of our different products, for all of our different product targets, but we can't set a different bid for desktop traffic versus mobile traffic, not a discrete bid. So I can't say I'm willing to pay 50 cents a click on computers and I'm willing to pay 25 cents on mobile. I can't say that explicitly. What Google does give us the option to do, though, is say I'm willing to bid 50 cents on desktop traffic, and then I can set a bid adjustment, which is in the settings tab in AdWords for mobile, and I can set that bid adjustment to 50%, minus 50%, right? So my desktop, my computer bid is 50 cents. My mobile adjustment is minus 50%. So effectively, I'm telling Google I can bid 25 cents on mobile. Fortunately, they let us go all the way down to minus 100%. So at that point, I'm telling Google I don't want to bid anything on mobile. So they do still give us a way to kind of keep ourselves out of the mobile traffic if we want to. Hope that answers the question.
Hmm. I think so. Let's see here. I'm trying to find another one. How are CTR rates of PLAs compared to standard Google text ads?
John, you want to speak to that one? Since you're probably on both sides of that.
Say that once again.
Click-through rates of PLAs compared to text.
Well, I mean, for us, we get more clicks from our text ads, but we get more sales from our PLA ads. So, I mean, right. So the ROI on the PLAs is way higher than our regular text ad rate. But having it in both places, I think, has added some validity to our small business versus some of the larger businesses that are doing the same product. So being able to be listed, you know, with that picture and being able to be seen when we're not necessarily always being able to afford, you know, the text ad side has been a really big boom for us.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. There's a couple of questions about, like, sort of what to do if you're a small business. So I'm going to kind of dump them into one question. First one is, can product listing ads help a small business with limited inventory increase sales? And if so, how can they help a specialty site? And, you know, another person sort of wanted to know how Google Shopping can help out a small business that's sort of competing with Amazon. I mean, can you kind of, I don't know if either of you can just kind of give your observations there.
I'll give you my opinion. And for those of you that don't know me, my opinion is always very candid. First, stop thinking about competing with Amazon because you can't. There is something to be said about understanding your place in the food chain. Okay, so you don't have a bunch of little fishes running around talking about how do I compete with a shark. Amazon is a shark. So what it really is about how to be relevant to buyers at the time when they're ready to buy. And what paid listing ads are doing for us as small sellers is that we have the data, the cost, and the ability to understand and react to the changes of our campaigns like we weren't able to do before. And for me as a small guy, you know, small fish, PLAs are giving me an opportunity to target the high-performing product. So let's say that you are a retailer and you've got a short list of products, you know, and you don't have to have all these UPCs. I don't do all of my UPCs anymore. I do the highly qualified, highly targeted ones. So if you only got a few SKUs, then you can actually target those SKUs for your PLA ads. And I think that gives me, as a small guy, the opportunity to be shown next to these big guys. So if you're seeing an ad and you can get it at, and let's look at the search engine results page, you've got about five pictures that will show up there that are paid listing ads. Let's say one's from Amazon, one's from Walmart, and one's from you. The thing is that there are people in the world that say, look, I don't want to order from those big guys. I want to find the independent guy that's going to give me the service that I need and the price comparison that I want. So if you want to be different, the first thing you want to differentiate with is that picture, because they're going to use the default picture. You know, don't use the default picture. Take one of your own and make sure it's a nice, high-quality picture showing the, you know, product. That'll help differentiate you from the other two guys or three guys that are big boys that use the standard piece. Those are little things that, you know, I could go into it for an hour, but I won't. But there's a lot of opportunity for you.
Did you want to add anything, Ronnie? Or
maybe we should move on to other questions. I think John gave a good perspective on.
Okay. Let's see. I guess a couple of questions around PLAs again, specifically. Are you able to see users click, how users click on multiple ads before converting? Is that one of these sort of, you know, things that, you know, stats you're able to track?
Not directly through AdWords, no, but with tracking parameters that we might add to the URLs we send to Google, we can see that. So Channel Advisor software can tell us when that happens because we have our own tracking system. A merchant might also be able to see that if they're using Omniture tracking or Core Metrics tracking or one of these other popular out-of-the-box attribution software packages. But AdWords won't report that to us.
Right. Okay. Also, can you target geographically with PLAs?
That's a very good question, and the answer to that is yes. We can set up multiple campaigns. You have to do this at the campaign level. We can both exclude geographies from a campaign, and then we can kind of include specific geographies in a campaign. So it is an option. I would encourage you to do a Google search for that. It's out there.
A lot of questions coming in. Is appearing on the main page based purely on bid price?
Based purely on bid price?
Yeah.
John, you want to run with that one?
It's not based purely on bid price. There are some other factors. I know one of them is picture quality. It's the black box thing, so it's not totally based on that. It's also based on relevancy. It's based on the keyword that the searcher put in. So I don't think it's just totally based on that. But mostly, I'm sure.
I would add to that. Yeah, so visibility is a combination of relevancy primarily and bidding. Now, how Google combines those factors together is anyone's guess. We know from a user experience point of view, they want to show shoppers products that are relevant to the query. If they were just to throw products up that were purely the highest bid, then they're not giving a good user experience. So relevancy is certainly a big part of it, and that's why we talked. You know, that's why we started the seven tips with talking about content optimization. You want those terms that people are searching for to be in your feed to give you a chance to be there. If they're not, it doesn't really matter what your bid is. You're not going to be there. So start with the content relevance piece and then play with bids from there to get that visibility.
Okay. Let's see. This is kind of an interesting one. Many of the products the listener has on her website do not have SKU numbers or brand names. Like, for instance, she just has the word birdhouse or water fountain. Can she get these types of products, on Google or the Google AdWords? I'm sorry, not Google AdWords, Google Shopping.
It's going to be a challenge. I will say this. Google just, it depends on the nature of those products. Google just introduced a custom goods kind of functionality. So if those products don't have brands or MPNs or UPCs because they are – one-off goods that aren't generally available, then there is an option inside the feed to tell Google that. And at that point, if they agree with you that you should be exempt from sending those data points, then they will let those products go through.
Okay, interesting. That's an interesting one. Okay, how about this? For a product, sorry, Don. Did you want to say something?
No, I was saying, I learned something.
Interesting. So for product-level PLAs, do you suggest only putting a true promotion in the promotion field or information about the product? It's sort of like a content management question.
It is. I can tell you from my perspective, we want to put something there. If we don't have a true promotion going on, then we want to put something. If the challenge in putting information about the product is if we think back to how we get those promotional texts up there, we do that through AdWords, and we do that at the ad group level. So if the ad group consists of more than one product, we can only put one message for that ad group. So if the ad group consists of more than one product, we need to have a message that can apply to all of those products. The flip side of that is we could set up our own ad group for one SKU and set up an ad for that SKU that has that product-level information. That's not something we can do through the feed. It has to be done in AdWords, so that presents a bit of a challenge. If it was something we could do through the feed, it would be a lot easier to put specific SKU-specific promotional messaging there. But our recommendation is you want the real estate and you want to convey value, and if there's not a site-wide promotion that you're doing, if there's not a coupon code that you can share, if there's not a free shipping policy that you can share, what else can you talk about? Can you talk about your return policy? Can you talk about your 100% satisfaction guarantee? Put something out there that conveys value and use that real estate since it's free.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we have time for just one more question, and then just to let everybody listening know that if you've asked a question and we haven't gotten to it, Ronnie and or John will be happy to answer it. Let's see. I think this one might be a good one to end on. If you can talk a little bit about comparing the prices of PLAs to other media such as print ads, direct mail, display ad networks, email marketing. Is there like a general, stat there at the percentage of cost?
Wow. You know, I'm going to let Ronnie talk, and I'm just going to give my opinion. I think I have not had the opportunity to really go into print as much, and I think the cost is always based on the return of the investment, because I've always come from the standpoint of if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. So the deal is on these kind of digital advertising, you have the back end to really see the actual ROI. If I spent X, I got how many clicks I got. I can figure out that click-through rate and all that. I don't know if you can actually do that with a catalog. I'm sure there are metrics for catalogs, but they're definitely not the same as they are for digital. So it's almost like apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm. I feel that way, too. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Before I close, I just want to make sure that the listeners have a chance to make sure that they know how to contact these two great these two great speakers. So, I know, John, do you want to quickly let folks know how they can get in touch with you after the webinar?
Okay, I'm John, J-O-H-N, at colderice.com. The blog is colderice.com, and we have a free chat group on Facebook called the e-commerce group. Just look for the e-commerce group in a Facebook search. You'll find me. I'm there all the time.
And then, Ronnie, did you want to let folks know how to get in touch with you? Or?
So let's use the email address info@channeladvisor.com.
Perfect.
Spelling out my name will take a while.
Okay. They should ask for Ronnie.
That's right. That's it.
Okay, great. Okay, so, you know, as we've covered quite a bit of ground today, so it looks like we're just about out of time. So on behalf of Retail Online Integration Channel Advisor and also John Lawson, I want to thank you all for attending today's webinar. So be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. So we'll see you again at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Bye, everybody.